0016. The front yard looked like a war zone. Teenagers were milling around in the yard and the street, leaning on vintage Porsches, Ferraris, and Transams, dancing, drinking, and making out. Parked in the middle of the driveway, there was a red BMW with a drive-in food tray hanging from its passenger window. A mud-covered blue sedan was parked on top of a Beamer, and two teenagers were making out in its back seat. I walked up to the front door and pressed the doorbell. A loud gong sounded as it swung inward. A young Asian man was hanging from the inside of the door. He was extremely intoxicated. It took me a second to realize I knew him. It was Long Duk Dong, Getty Watanabe's infamous character from 16 Candles. "What's a happenin', hot stuff?" he said, speaking with a thick accent. When I failed to answer, the donger motioned for me to come on inside. I thanked him and continued on into the house. It was packed with rich, drunk white kids in full-on party mode. I bumped into a young Joan Cusack, dressed as the girl in the neck brace we'd seen earlier on the bus. She was trying to drink a beer by leaning her whole body backward, but then she leaned too far and fell on the floor. Then I went to do a sweep of the living room, but was nearly crushed by a set of exercise weights that came crashing down through the ceiling. They continued to crash on through the floor, opening up an enormous hole into the wine cellar and smashing dozens of the bottles stored there. I continued to make a complete circuit of the house, but didn't see Ian or Max anywhere. I had just made my way back to the living room when I received a text from Artemis on my HUD telling me to meet her at Stubby's house next door in the backyard. I sprinted outside and across the perfectly manicured lawn to the rear of the adjacent house, which was also in the process of being trashed by reckless drunken teenagers. In Stubby's backyard, I found Artemis holding two extremely handsome teenaged boys at gunpoint, Ian and Max from Weird Science. Max was played by the actor Robert Russler, whom I also knew from his role as Ron Grady in A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. And Ian was played by an impossibly young Robert Downey Jr. "Holy shit," I said, "the OG Iron Man. I forgot he was in a John Hughes movie." "Just one," Artemis said. "A supporting role in Weird Science. But, little known fact, Robert Downey Jr. almost played the lead in another Hughes film. That's why we need him." Artemis pointed at Max. "Him, we can let go," she said. She lowered her assault rifle so that it was no longer pointed at Max's head. Max stood there, frozen for a second. Then he turned tail and took off running across the expansive green lawn in the direction of Jake Ryan's house. He never looked back. Artemis turned her attention back to Ian. She removed the bag of weed she'd taken from Bender's locker and dangled it in front of him. The expression on his face suddenly went blank, as if he'd been hypnotized. "Would you like some of this?" Artemis asked. "Why, yes, madam," Ian replied. "I certainly would." He reached for the bag, but she yanked it back out of his reach. "I'll make you a deal," Artemis said. "I'll give you this whole bag of doobage if you just perform two simple tasks for me." "Sure," Ian said, batting his eyelashes at her. "Anything you say, doll." "I figured out this little trick by playing through all the official Weird Science quests," Artemis said. "The NPC recreations of Max and Ian are both total hedonists, and they'll perform nearly any task in exchange for sex or drugs." She turned to smile at him. "Isn't that right, Ian?" RDJ batted his eyelashes at her again and nodded. Artemis opened her inventory and took out the wingtip shoes and bolo tie she'd looted from Ducky back at the high school, then held them out to Ian. "First, I need you to put these on," she said. "Then I need you to go dance with Andy Walsh at the senior prom tonight. Deal?"
"Deal,"
Ian said. He took the shoes from her and put them on. Then he put the bolo tie around his neck. As soon as he did, his wardrobe and hairstyle changed. He no longer looked like Robert Downey Jr. as Ian in Weird Science. Now he looked like Robert Downey Jr. in Back to School, in the role of Derek Lutz. But he was dressed in the same vintage suit that John Cryer wore in the original ending of Pretty in Pink. When his transformation completed, it triggered another music cue. At first, I thought I was hearing the song I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis and the News, but as soon as the lyrics kicked in, I realized it was actually Weird Al Yankovic's parody, I Want a New Duck. The song only played for 5 or 6 seconds, while the newly anointed Robert Ducky Jr. did a little dance to show off his new attire. Then the song cut out, and he struck a pose and said, "I remain now, and will always be, a duckman." He pointed down at his shoes, turned his left foot left, then his right foot right, before realigning them both. Then he looked back up at us. When we failed to applaud, he frowned and sniffed each of his armpits before asking, "Do I offend?" Artemis let out a victorious cry, then ran over and slapped him on the back. "Robert Downey Jr. was originally supposed to play the role of Ducky," she explained, "but the studio decided to cast John Cryer in the role instead, and when the first cut of the film was screened, no one in the test audience wanted Ducky and Andy to end up together. So on short notice, Hughes was forced to write a new ending, one in which Andy ends up with that rich douchebag Blaine instead." "Really?" I said. "I never knew that." I shook my head. "Pretty impressive, Artie." "Why, thank you, Parzival," she replied, sounding genuinely pleased with herself. I remembered reading an old interview with Molly Ringwald, where she said she believed Hughes's original ending of Pretty in Pink would have worked if Robert Downey Jr. had played the role of Ducky as originally intended, because the two of them would have had a lot more on-screen chemistry. I recited the inscription again, this time from memory. "Recast the foul, restore his ending. Andy's first fate still needs mending." So that was Andy's first fate, I said, to wind up with RDJ as Ducky? And the only way to mend that fate is to recast the foul? I smiled at Artemis and shook my head. "Artie, you're a genius." I gave her a round of applause and she took a small bow. Then she grabbed Robert Ducky Jr. by the arm and took off running again. I ran after them as they sprinted across Stubby's lawn and then over to a Rolls-Royce convertible that was parked in Jake Ryan's driveway. Artemis shoved Ducky into the back seat and then got behind the wheel. I jumped into the passenger seat beside her. "Hey," I said, "wouldn't we get there faster in a Ferrari?" I pointed to the woods behind Jake Ryan's house. There, visible through the trees, was a secluded house on stilts. I recognized it as Cameron Fry's residence. And from here, we could see the separate glass-walled garage at the back of the house. "Forget it," Artemis said. "Cameron's dad has a state-of-the-art security system. You can only steal that car in the daytime, with the keys and with Cameron's help. If you try to steal it now, you'll end up in the Shermer jail with the kid from Reach the Rock. It's easy enough to escape, but we'd waste 30 minutes. She smiled. "We could steal the same Ferrari from Alec Baldwin in a church parking lot just a few blocks from here," she said, pointing off to the south. Then she glanced at her watch. "But the Briggs-Bainbridge wedding doesn't start for another hour?" "Sorry, but I'm afraid Mr. Ryan's Rolls-Royce is our best option at the moment." "Fine," I muttered. "We'll take this brown shitbox." "Buckle up, Ace," Artemis said, glancing over at me. She waited for me to comply. Once I did, she gave me a devious smile. "This is getting good," she said, as she shifted the car into drive and floored the gas. This triggered another needle drop, the Peter Gunn theme, which continued to play as the Rolls-Royce peeled out, carrying us off into the night. As Artemis drove through the moonlit labyrinth of suburban streets at breakneck speed, Robert Downey Jr. and I were jerked around in our seats again and again as she whipped the Rolls around sharp corners. For a few minutes, I felt like we'd been transported into a game of Grand Theft Auto Shermer until Artemis turned onto the highway and our ride smoothed out. Taking the on-ramp triggered a fresh needle drop, Holiday Road by Lindsey Buckingham, which cut back out when we got off the highway a few exits later. At some point, we must have crossed over the railroad tracks and entered the poor side of town because the houses around us became smaller, crappier, and closer together. As we were driving down one of these streets, I spotted Harry Dean Stanton, dressed in a bathrobe, sitting on a lawn chair in his darkened front yard, reading a newspaper. A few houses down, I saw John Bender standing in an open garage, smoking a cigarette while he stirred a can of paint. Then I noticed the house right next door, which looked completely abandoned. The lawn was overgrown, the windows were all boarded up, and a foreclosed sign was nailed to the front door. Then I noticed the name printed on the rusted mailbox out front, D. Griffith. I pointed it out to Artemis and she smiled. "There are 5 different John Candy NPCs wandering around Shermer," she said. "Can you name all of them?" "Sure," I said. "Del Griffith, of course. Then there's Chet Ripley, C.D. Marsh, and Gus Polinski, the Polka King of the Midwest." Oh, and I saw Buck Russell this morning. She grinned at me, impressed. Not bad, Watts, she said. Still sharp as a tack. She pointed to a log cabin-style restaurant on the other side of the street called Paul Bunyan's Cupboard, with large statues of Paul and Babe the Blue Ox by its front entrance. Want to stop in and try to eat an old 96er? Artemis asked. It's probably a lot harder when you're using an ONI. Appearing to realize what she'd just said, she cut herself off, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw her wince. Fuck yes, I said, elbowing her in the ribs to let her know it was all right. If we had time, I would destroy an old 96er right now, I lowered my voice. You might think I'd be opposed to eating something with the word sixer in its name, but I am not. At all. Artemis laughed her laugh again, and it was music to my ears. When this is over, we're coming back here to chow down, okay? I said. She nodded and said, it's a date. I felt myself turn several different shades of red. As we continued to drive, I stole a glance over at her in the driver's seat. The top was down and the wind was in her hair. She looked beautiful and happy, and I was still madly in love with her, no matter how much I denied it. Out of nowhere, another needle drop triggered, and a new song began to play, More Than a Feeling by Boston. The same song plays during a brief flashback in She's Having a Baby when Jake falls in love with his future wife, Christy, at first sight. As soon as it began, Artemis snapped her head to the right and caught me staring at her. I glanced away, pretending to look out the windshield, but in the reflection in the glass, I thought I caught a glimpse of her smiling. Then I heard her laugh. What's so funny? I asked. That song, she replied. It starts to play whenever one avatar stares at another avatar for longer than 5 seconds while also experiencing a drastic increase in their heart rate. It's a little Easter egg they added for ONI users last year. Great, I muttered, busted by my own biomonitors. She laughed, keeping her eyes on the road ahead. I sank down into my seat and pretended to look out the window, wishing that magic worked on this planet so that I could turn myself invisible. We arrived at the Shermer Hotel a few minutes later. Artemis screeched Mr. Ryan's Rolls-Royce up onto the curb, causing several NPC pedestrians to dive out of the way. The three of us jumped out of the car and sprinted toward the hotel's main entrance, but RDJ skidded to a halt just shy of the threshold. I'm sorry, he said to Artemis, but I can't go in there. What? She replied, grabbing him by his satin lapels. Why the hell not? You promised, and I already gave you all of Bender's weed. I know, RDJ replied, and I want to help you out, but I can't go in there. Not like this. I wouldn't know what to do or say. You don't have to say anything, Artemis said, prodding him toward the entrance. Just go in there, find the hot redhead in the atrocious pink nightgown, and ask her to dance. That's it. Done. The RDJ NPC shook his head and didn't budge. Artemis nodded at me, and I grabbed him around the waist, lifted him off the ground, and attempted to carry him across the threshold. But I couldn't do it. It was like he kept bouncing off an invisible force field that somehow prevented him from going inside. I tried a few more times anyway, to no avail. Then RDJ began to struggle, trying to get free of my grip. I'm sorry, he cried, but I'm just not emotionally prepared at this exact juncture to go in there. I mean, look how I'm dressed, and I never know what to say at formal social gatherings such as this. Artemis gave me a nod, and I let go of him. He straightened his suit and gave me an indignant glare. I thought he might bolt, but instead he folded his arms and began to absentmindedly tap his foot, an indication that he was running an idle animation. I turned to Artemis. Recast the foul, restore his ending, I recited. This whole time we thought the clue meant we were supposed to restore Ducky's ending. But what if restore his ending means we need to restore John Hughes's ending? The ending of Pretty in Pink he originally wrote in his screenplay. I nodded at the RDJ NPC. What if we need to find a copy of the original script and give it to him? Artemis threw up her hands. And how are we supposed to do that? I smiled at her. We go to the writer's house, I replied. She gave me a puzzled look for a few seconds, then her eyes lit up with understanding. Holy shit, she cried. That might be it. Z, you're a genius. Before I knew what the hell was happening, she grabbed my face and planted a kiss on me. She wasn't wearing an ONI headset, so I knew she didn't feel that kiss. But I did. Then she turned to RDJ. "Don't go anywhere," she told him. "We'll be right back." Then she grabbed me by the arm and pulled me back in the direction of the car.